welcome to Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Come on in and sit a while. Relax. Put your feet up while we tell you a story. Today's presentation is based on Mark Twain's short story, The Stolen White Elephant. According to Mr. Twain, this tale was left out of his book, A Tramp Abroad, because it was feared that some of the particulars had been exaggerated and that others were not true. Before these suspicions had been proved groundless, the book had gone to press. According to Twain, the case of the stolen white elephant was related by a chance railway acquaintance. His gentle face and sincere manner were evidence of the truth of each statement he made. But let's hear it now, in his own words.
You know in what reverence the royal white elephant of Siam is held by the people of that country. It is sacred to kings. Only kings may possess it, and it is not merely honored, but worshipped. Very well. 5 years ago, when the troubles concerning the frontier line arose between Great Britain and Siam, it was presently manifest that Siam had been in the wrong. Therefore, every reparation was quickly made, and the British representative stated,
"I am satisfied, and the past shall be forgotten."
This greatly relieved the King of Siam, and as a token of gratitude, he wished to send the Queen a present, the sole sure way of propitiating an enemy, according to Oriental ideas. This present must be one worthy of royalty. What offering could be more appropriate than a white elephant? In my position as American ambassador to Siam, I was deemed worthy of the honor of conveying the present to Her Majesty. In due time, our ship arrived in New York, but it was necessary to remain a while in order for the elephant to regain its health before resuming the voyage. All went well during a fortnight. Then my calamities began. I was awakened from a deep sleep early one morning. Yes?
Are you the owner of the white elephant?
Well, I'm not the owner, but I am responsible.
It's been stolen.
Stolen? But how can an elephant be stolen?
You got me there, Buster.
This was a fearful misfortune. There was but the one course for an intelligent man to pursue. Early as it was, I got a policeman to conduct me to the headquarters of the detective force. Fortunately, I arrived just as the celebrated Inspector Blunt was coming in for the morning. The very sight of him gave me confidence and made me hopeful. I stated my errand. It did not flurry him in the least. It had no more visible effect upon his iron self-possession than if I had told him somebody had stolen my dog. He motioned me to a seat, and then, after a moment of thought, said calmly,
"This is no ordinary case. Every step must be warily taken. Each step must be made sure before the next is ventured, and secrecy must be observed. Secrecy profound and absolute. Speak to no one about the matter, not even the reporters. I will take care of them. I will see that they get only what it may suit my ends to let them know. Alaric, tell the reporters to remain for the present."
"As you wish, sir."
"Now, let us proceed to business, and systematically. Nothing can be accomplished in this trade of mine without strict adherence to methodology. Now, name of the elephant."
"Hassan Ben Ali Salim Abdallah Mohammed Moist Dulip Ibu Budpur."
"Very well. Given name."
"Jumbo."
"Very well. Place of birth."
"The capital city of Siam."
"Parents living?"
"No, dead."
"Had they any other issue besides this one?"
"None. He was an only child."
"Very well. That's enough history. Now, please describe the elephant and leave out no particular, however insignificant. In my profession, there are no insignificant particulars. They do not exist."
I described while he wrote. When I was done, he said,
"Now listen. If I have made any mistakes, correct me. Height, 19 feet. Length from head to tail, 26 feet. Length of trunk, 16 feet. Length of tail, 6 feet. Total length, including trunk and tail, 48 feet. Length of tusks, 9 feet. Ears keeping with these dimensions. Footprint resembles the mark left when one upends a barrel in the snow. The color of the elephant, a dull white. Possesses the habit of squirting water upon spectators and of maltreating with his trunk not only such persons as he is acquainted with, but even entire strangers. Has a small scar in his left armpit caused by a former boil. Had on, when stolen, a gold cloth saddle blanket the size of an ordinary carpet. Is that all?"
There were no mistakes.
Alaric, have 50,000 copies of this printed at once and mailed to every detective office and pawnbroker's shop on the continent. Go, Alaric. There. So far, so good. Next, I must have a photograph of the property.
I have one here.
It must do, I suppose. But he has his trunk curled up and inserted into his mouth. That is unfortunate and may mislead because, I assume, he does not usually have it in that position.
You are correct, sir. His mouth is not normally truncated.
Alaric, have 50,000 copies of this photograph made and mail them with the descriptive circulars. Go! Now, it will be necessary to offer a reward, of course. Now, as to the amount...
What sum would you suggest?
To begin with, I should say, well, $25,000. It is an intricate and difficult business. There are 1,000 avenues of escape and opportunities of concealment. These thieves have friends and pals everywhere.
Bless me, do you know who they are?
Never mind about that. I may or I may not. We generally gather a pretty shrewd inkling of who our man is by the manner of his work and the size of the game he goes after. We are not dealing with a pickpocket or a common burglar now. Make up your mind to that. This property was not lifted by a novice. But, as I was saying, considering the amount of travel which will have to be done, and the diligence with which the thieves will have covered their tracks, $25,000 may be too small a sum to offer, yet I think it worthwhile to start with that.
It seems like quite a sum, but if you think it necessary...
There are cases in detective history to show that criminals have been detected through their peculiarities of their captives, such as their appetites. Now, what does this elephant eat and how much?
Well, as to what he eats, he will eat anything. He will eat a man. He will eat a Bible. He will eat anything between a man and a Bible.
Very good. Good indeed. But... Two general details are necessary. As to men at one meal, or if you prefer, during one day, how many men will he eat if fresh?
He would not care whether they were fresh or not. At a single meal, he would eat 5 ordinary men.
Very good. 5 men. We will put that down. What nationalities would he prefer?
He is indifferent about nationalities. He prefers acquaintances, but is not prejudiced against strangers.
Very good. General quantity at a meal, say about...
Well, anywhere from 1/4 to 1/2 ton.
And he drinks...
Everything that is fluid. Milk, water, whiskey, molasses, castor oil, camphene, carbolic acid. It is no use to go into particulars. Whatever fluid occurs to you, set it down. He will drink anything that is fluid except European coffee.
Very good. No European coffee. Alaric! Summon Detective Jones, Davis, Halsey, Bates, and Hackett to shadow the elephant.
Yes, sir.
Detail Detectives Moses, Dakin, Murphy, Rogers, Tupper, Higgins, and Bartholomew to shadow the thieves.
Yes, sir.
Place a strong guard, a guard of 30 picked men, with a relief of 30, over the place from whence the elephant was stolen, to keep strict watch there night and day and allow none to approach, except reporters, without written authority from me.
Yes, sir.
Place detectives in plain clothes in the railway, steamship, and ferry depots, and upon all roadways leading out of the city with orders to search all suspicious persons.
Yes, sir.
Furnish all these men with photograph and accompanying description of the elephant, and instruct them to search all trains and outgoing ferryboats and other vessels.
Yes, sir.
If the elephant should be found, let him be seized and the information forwarded to me by telegraph.
Yes, sir.
Let me be informed at once if any clues should be found, footprints of the animal, anything of that kind.
Yes, sir.
Get an order commanding the harbor police to patrol the frontages vigilantly, and dispatch detectives in plain clothes over all the railways, north as far as Canada, west as far as Ohio, south as far as Washington.
Yes, sir.
Place experts at all the telegraph offices to listen in to all messages and let them require that all cipher dispatches be interpreted by them.
Yes, sir.
Ah, yes. Now, let all these things be done with utmost secrecy. Mind, the most impenetrable secrecy.
Yes, sir.
Report to me promptly at the usual hour.
Yes, sir.
Go.
Yes, sir.
I am not given to boasting. It is not my habit. But we shall find the elephant.
I shook him warmly by the hand and thanked him. The more I had seen of the man, the more I liked him, and the more I admired him and marveled over the mysterious wonders of his profession. Next morning, it was all in the newspapers, in the minutest detail. It even had additions consisting of detective this, detective that, and detective the other's theory as to how the robbery was done, who the robbers were, and whither they had flown with their booty. There were 11 of these theories, and they covered all the possibilities. And this single fact shows what independent thinkers detectives are. No two theories were alike, or even much resembled each other. The various newspaper accounts all closed with the most important opinion of all, that of Chief Inspector Blunt. A portion of this statement read as follows.
The chief knows who the two principals are, namely Brick Daffy and Red McFadden. Daffy and McFadden are the boldest scoundrels in the profession. The chief had reason to believe that they are the men who stole the stove out of the detective headquarters on a bitter night last winter, in consequence of which the chief and every detective present were in the hands of the physicians before morning, some with frozen feet, others with frozen fingers, ears, and other members.
After reading the papers, I was more astonished than ever at the wonderful sagacity of this strange man. I was soon at his office. Inspector, I cannot help wishing you had arrested Daffy and McFadden, and so prevented the theft of my elephant.
It is not our province to prevent crime, but to punish it. We cannot punish it until it is committed.
But, Inspector, the secrecy with which we began seems to have been marred by the newspapers. Not only all our facts, but all our plans and purposes have been revealed. Even all the suspected persons have been named. They will doubtless disguise themselves now, or go into hiding.
Let them. They will find that when I am ready for them, my hand will descend upon them in their secret places as unerringly as the hand of fate. As to the newspapers, we must keep on favorable terms with them. Fame, reputation, constant public mention, these are the detective's bread and butter.
I see the force of what you say, but I notice that in one part of your remarks in the papers this morning, you refuse to reveal your opinion upon a certain minor point.
Yes, we always do that. It has a good effect. Besides, I had not formed any opinion on that point anyway.
I deposited a considerable sum of money with you this morning, Inspector, to meet current expenses. When do you believe we might hear anything?
Oh, we expect telegrams to begin arriving at any moment now.
In the papers, I observe that the $25,000 reward seems to be offered only to detectives. Perhaps it ought to be offered to anybody who can catch the elephant.
It is the detectives who will find the elephant. Hence, the reward will go to the right place. If other people found the animal, it would only be by watching the detectives and taking advantage of clues and indications stolen from them, and that would entitle the detectives to the reward after all. The purpose of a reward is to stimulate the men who deliver up their time and their trained sagacities to this sort of work, and not to confer benefits upon chance citizens who stumble upon an errant elephant without having earned the benefits by their own merits and labor.
That seems reasonable enough, certainly.
Ah, here we go, our first bit of information. It says, Flower Station, New York, 7:30 a.m. Have got a clue. Found a succession of deep tracks across a farm near here. Followed them 2 miles east without result. Think elephant went west. Shall now shadow him in that direction. Detective Darley. Darley's one of the best men on the force. We shall hear from him again before long. Ah, here comes another. Baker's, Delaware. 7:40 a.m. Just arrived. Glass factory broken open here during night. And 800 bottles taken. Only water in large quantity near here is 5 miles distance. Shall strike for there. Elephant will be thirsty. Bottles were empty. Detective Davis. I told you the creature's appetite would not be a bad clue.
And a bit later...
Another missive. The men are hot on the trail. This one says, Taylorville, New Jersey, 8:15 a.m. A haystack near here disappeared during night. Probably eaten, have got a clue, and am off. Detective Hubbard. How that elephant moves around. Yet I knew... We had a more difficult job on hand, but we shall catch him yet. Here comes more information. Flower Station, New York, 8:25 a.m. shadowed the tracks 3 miles westward, large, deep, and ragged. Have just met a farmer who says they are not elephant tracks. Says they are holes where he dug up saplings for shade trees when ground was frozen last winter. Give me orders how to proceed, Detective Darley. Ha ha! A confederate of the thieves. The thing grows warm. Alaric, send this telegram to Darley. Arrest the farmer and force him to name his accomplices. Continue to follow the tracks to the Pacific, if necessary, Chief Blunt.
The next telegram said,
Glover's, Rhode Island, 11:15, just arrived, village deserted except for sick and aged. Elephant passed through 3/4 hour ago. The anti-temperance mass meeting was in session. He put his trunk in at a window and washed it out with water from cistern. Some swallowed it, since dead. Several drowned. Detectives Cross and O'Shaughnessy were passing through town, but going south. So missed Elephant. Whole region for many miles around in terror. People flying from their homes. Wherever they turn, they meet Elephant, and many are killed. Detective Brandt.
This is disastrous. Complete havoc.
Calm yourself. You see, we are closing in on him. He feels our presence. He has turned eastward again.
A succession of telegrams came from detectives who were scattered through New Jersey and Pennsylvania and who were following clues consisting of ravaged barns, factories, and Sunday school libraries with high hopes, hopes amounting to certainties. The inspector said,
I wish I could communicate with them and order them north, but that is impossible. A detective only visits a telegraph office to send his report. Then he is off again, and you don't know where to put your hand on him.
Now came this dispatch.
Bridgeport, Connecticut, 12:15. Barnum offers a rate of $4,000 a year for exclusive privilege of using Elephant as traveling advertising medium from now until detectives find him. Wants to paste circus posters on him. Desires immediate answer, Detective Boggs.
That is perfectly absurd.
Of course it is. Evidently Barnum, who thinks he is so sharp, does not know me, but I know him. Alaric, send a telegram to Barnum informing him that his offer is declined. Make it $7,000 or nothing, Chief Blunt. There. We shall have not long to wait for an answer, knowing Mr. Barnum.
Here is a dispatch from Mr. Barnum, sir. All it says is, done. P.T. Barnum.
Before I could make a comment upon this extraordinary episode, the following dispatch carried my thoughts into another and very distressing channel.
Bolivia, New York, 12:50. Elephant arrived here from the south and passed through toward the forest at 11:50, dispersing a funeral on the way and diminishing the mourners by 2. Citizens fired some small cannonballs into him, and they fled. Detective Burke and I arrived 10 minutes later from the north, but mistook some excavations for footprints and so lost a good deal of time. But we at last struck the right trail and followed it to the woods. We then got down on our hands and knees and continued to keep a sharp eye on the track, and so shadowed it into the brush. Burke was in advance. Unfortunately, the animal had stopped to rest. Therefore, Burke, having his head down, intent upon the track, butted up against the elephant's hind legs before he was aware of his vicinity. Burke instantly arose to his feet, seized the tail, and exclaimed joyfully, I claim the re, but got no further, for a single blow of the huge trunk laid the brave fellow into fragments. I fled rearward, and the elephant turned and shadowed me to the edge of the woods, making tremendous speed, and I should inevitably have been lost, but that the remains of the funeral providentially intervened again and diverted his attention. I have just learned that nothing of that funeral is now left, but this is no loss, for there are abundant material for another. Meantime, the elephant has disappeared again, Detective Mulrooney.
We heard no news except from the diligent detectives scattered about New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Virginia, who were all following fresh and encouraging clues. At nightfall, a fog shut down, which was so dense that objects but 3 feet away could not be discerned. This lasted all night. The ferryboats and even the omnibuses had to stop running. Next morning, the papers were as full of detective theories as before. They had all our tragic facts in detail also, and a great many more which they had received from their telegraphic correspondents. Column after column was occupied, a third of its way down, with glaring headlines, which it made my heart sick to read. Their general tone was like this.
The white elephant at large. He moves upon his fatal march. Whole villages deserted by their fright-stricken occupants. Pale terror goes before him. Death and devastation follow after. Barns destroyed. Factories gutted. Harvests devoured. Public assemblages dispersed. Accompanied by scenes of carnage impossible to describe. Theories of 34 of the most distinguished detectives on the forces. Theory of Chief Blunt.
There, this is magnificent. This is the greatest windfall that any detective organization ever had. The fame of it will travel to the ends of the earth and endure to the end of time, and my name with it.
But there was no joy for me. I felt as if I had committed all those red crimes, and that the elephant was only my irresponsible agent. And how the list had grown. In one place, he had interfered with an election and killed 5 pollsters. He had followed this act with the destruction of 2 poor fellows named O'Donohue and McFlanagan, who were trying to steal a piano. In still another place, he had killed a lightning rod agent. And so the list went on, growing redder and redder and more heartbreaking.
According to my calculations, so far 60 persons have been killed and 240 wounded, but we will get him. No elephant can outwit my men.
I dreaded to hear the telegraphic instrument begin to click again. By and by, the messages began to pour in, but I was happily disappointed in their nature. It was soon apparent that all trace of the elephant was lost. The fog had enabled him to search out a good hiding place. Telegrams from the most absurdly distant points reported that a dim, vast mass had been glimpsed through the fog at such and such an hour, and was undoubtedly the elephant. This dim, vast mass had been glimpsed in New Jersey, in Pennsylvania, in interior New York, in Brooklyn, and even in the city of New York itself. But in all cases, the dim, vast mass had vanished quickly and left no trace.
Every detective on the force is scattered over a huge extent of the countryside, sending hourly reports, and each and every one of them has a clue and is shadowing something and is hot upon the heels of it. We will get that elephant yet.
But the day passed without other result. The next day, the same. The next, just the same. The newspaper reports began to grow monotonous with facts that amounted to nothing, clues which led to nothing, and theories which turned out to be fruitless. The inspector advised...
I believe it might be worthwhile to double the reward to $50,000. That should attract some attention.
I promptly followed the instructions of the inspector. 4 more dull days followed. Then came a bitter blow to the poor, hard-working detectives. The journalists declined to print their theories, and coldly said...
Give us a rest.
About 3 weeks after the elephant's disappearance, I was on the verge of telling the inspector that I was giving up, when the great detective arrested the thought by proposing one more superb and masterly move. This was to compromise with the robbers. The fertility of this man's invention exceeded anything I had ever seen, and I have had a wide intercourse with the world's finest minds. He said,
I am confident the thieves will compromise for $100,000, and we can recover the elephant.
I believe I can scrape the amount together. But what will become of the poor detectives who have worked so faithfully?
In compromises, they always get half.
Then I retract my objection. At 11 the next night, I brought $100,000 in banknotes and put them into the chief's hands. And shortly afterward, he took his leave, with the brave old undimmed confidence in his eye. An almost intolerable hour dragged to a close. Then I heard his welcome tread, and rose gasping and tottered to meet him. How his fine eyes flamed with triumph. He said,
We've compromised. The jokers will sing a different tune tomorrow. Follow me.
He took a lighted candle and strode down into the vast vaulted basement where 60 detectives always slept, and where a score were now playing cards to while away the time. I followed close after him. There was a foul stench about the place. He walked swiftly down to the dim and remote end of the place, and just as I had succumbed to the pangs of suffocation and was swooning away, he stumbled and fell over the outlying members of a mighty object.
Oof!
And I heard him exclaim as he went down,
Our noble profession is vindicated. Here is your elephant.
I was carried to the office above and restored with carbolic acid. The whole detective force swarmed in, and such another season of triumphant rejoicing ensued as I had never witnessed before. The reporters were called. Baskets of champagne were opened, toasts were drunk, the handshakings and congratulations were continuous and enthusiastic. Naturally, the chief was the hero of the hour, and his happiness was so complete, and had been so patiently and worthily and bravely won, that it made me happy to see it. Though I stood there, a homeless beggar, my priceless charge dead, and my position in my country's service lost me through what would always seem my fatally careless execution of a great trust. The dividing of the $50,000 made great pleasure. When it was finished, the chief made a little speech while he put his share in his pocket, in which he said,
"Enjoy it, boys, for you've earned it, and more than that, you've earned for the detective profession undying fame."
Shortly after, a telegram arrived which read,
"Monroe, Michigan, 10 p.m. First time I've struck a telegraph office in over 3 weeks. Have followed those footprints, horseback, through the woods 1,000 miles to here, and they get stronger and bigger and fresher every day. Don't worry, inside of another week I'll have the elephant. This is dead sure. Detective Darley." Ah, that's grand. Darley is one of the finest minds on the force. Alaric, telegraph him and tell him to come home and receive his share of the reward.
So ended that marvelous episode of the stolen elephant. The next day, the newspapers were pleasant with praises once more, with one contemptible exception. This publication said,
"Great is the detective. He may be a little slow in finding a little thing like a mislaid elephant. He may hunt him all day and sleep with his rotting carcass all night for 3 weeks, but he will find him at last, if he can get the man who mislaid him to show him the place."
Poor Hassan was lost to me forever. The cannon shots had wounded him fatally. He had crept to that unfriendly place in the fog, and there, surrounded by his enemies and in constant danger of detection, he had wasted away with hunger and suffering till death gave him peace. The compromise cost me $100,000. My detective expenses were $42,000 more. I never applied for a position again with the government. I am a ruined man and a wanderer on the earth, but my admiration for that man, whom I believe to be the greatest detective the world has ever produced, remains undimmed to this day, and will so remain unto the end.
We hope that you have enjoyed this presentation of Mark Twain's The Stolen White Elephant, brought to you by Maplewood Barn Theater and KBIA Radio. Today's performers were Michael Scott as the Ambassador, Dave Collins as Chief Inspector Blunt, Darren Helwidge as the Newscaster, Brad Buchanan as Alaric, and Byron Scott as the English Ambassador. Darren Helwidge was our sound engineer. Join us again next week for another relaxing audio play by a classic author. Thanks for listening.